Jane did not like Crystal Whedon, but Barry had liked her, so he assumed that there was more worth in her than he could see. Tessa knew her husband to be a strange mixture of arrogance and humility, of unshakable conviction and insecurity. "They're completely deluded," Tessa thought, looking at the other three, who were poring over some graph that Parminder had extracted from Kay's notes. "They think they'll reverse 60 years of anger and resentment with a few sheets of statistics." None of them was Barry. He had been a living example of what they proposed in theory: the advancement through education from poverty to affluence, from powerlessness and dependency to valuable contributor to society. Did they not see what hopeless advocates they were compared to the man who had died? "People are definitely getting irritable with the Mollisons trying to run everything," Colin was saying. "I do think," said Kay, "that they'll be hard pushed if they read this stuff to pretend that the clinic isn't doing crucial work." "Not everybody's forgotten Barry on the council," said Parminder in a slightly shaky voice. Tessa realized that her greasy fingers were groping vainly in space. While the others had talked, she had single-handedly finished the entire bowl of crisps. 7. It was a bright, balmy morning, and the computing lab at Winterdown Comprehensive became stuffy as lunchtime approached, the dirty windows speckling the dusty monitors with distracting spots of light. Even though there was no Fats or Gaia here to distract him, Andrew Price could not concentrate. He could think of nothing but what he'd overheard his parents discussing the previous evening. They had been talking, quite seriously, about moving to Reading, where Ruth's sister and brother-in-law lived. With his ear turned towards the open kitchen door, Andrew had hovered in the tiny dark hall and listened. Simon, it appeared, had been offered a job, or the possibility of a job, by the uncle whom Andrew and Paul barely knew, because Simon disliked him so much. "It's less money," Simon had said. "You don't know that," he hasn't said. "Bound to be. And it'll be more expensive all round living there." Ruth made a non-committal noise. Scarcely daring to breathe in the hall, Andrew could tell, by the mere fact that his mother was not rushing to agree with Simon, that she wanted to go. Andrew found it impossible to imagine his parents in any house but Hilltop House, or against any backdrop but Pagford. He had taken it for granted that they would remain there forever. He, Andrew, would leave one day for London, but Simon and Ruth would remain rooted to the hillside like trees until they died. He had crept back upstairs to his bedroom and stared out of the window at the twinkling lights of Pagford, cupped in the deep black hollow between the hills. He felt as though he had never seen the view before. Somewhere down there, Fats was smoking in his attic room, probably looking at porn on his computer. Gaia was there too, absorbed in the mysterious rites of her gender. It occurred to Andrew that she had been through this. She had been torn away from the place she knew and transplanted. They had something profoundly in common at last. There was almost melancholy pleasure in the idea that, in leaving, he would share something with her. But she had not caused her own displacement. With a squirming unease in his guts, he had picked up his mobile and texted Fats. "SciPy offered job in Reading. Might take it." Fats had still not responded, and Andrew had not seen him all morning, because they shared none of their classes. He had not seen Fats for the previous 2 weekends either, because he'd been working at the Copper Kettle. Their longest conversation recently had concerned Fats's posting about Cubby on the council website. "I think Tessa suspects," Fats had told Andrew casually. "She keeps looking at me like she knows." "What are you going to say?" Andrew had muttered, scared. He knew Fats's desire for glory and credit, and he knew Fats's passion for wielding the truth as a weapon, but he was not sure that his friend understood that his own pivotal role in the activities of the ghost of Barry Fairbrother must never be revealed. It had never been easy to explain to Fats the reality of having Simon as a father, and somehow Fats was becoming more difficult to explain things to. When his IT teacher had passed by out of sight, Andrew looked up Reading on the internet. It was huge compared with Pagford. It had an annual music festival. It was only 40 miles from London. He contemplated the train service. Perhaps he would go up to the capital at weekends, the way he currently took the bus to Yarville. But the whole thing seemed unreal. Pagford was all he'd ever known. He could still not imagine his family existing anywhere else. At lunchtime, Andrew headed straight out of school, looking for Fats. He lit up a cigarette just out of sight of the grounds, and was delighted to hear, as he was slipping his lighter casually back into his pocket, a female voice that said, "Hey!" Gaia and Sukhvinder caught up with him. "All right," he said, blowing smoke away from Gaia's beautiful face. The three of them had something these days that nobody else had. 2 weekends' work at the cafe had created a fragile bond between them. They knew Howard's stock phrases, and had endured Maureen's prurient interest in all of their home lives. They had smirked together at her wrinkled knees in the too short waitress's dress, and had exchanged, like traders in a foreign land, small nuggets of personal information. Thus, the girls knew that Andrew's father had been sacked. Andrew and Sukhvinder knew that Gaia was working to save for a train ticket back to Hackney, and he and Gaia knew that Sukhvinder's mother hated her working for Howard Mollison. "Where's your fat friend?" she asked, as the three of them fell into step together. "Dunno," said Andrew. "Haven't seen him." "No loss," said Gaia. "How many of those do you smoke a day?" "Don't count," said Andrew, elated by her interest. "Do you want one?" "No," said Gaia. "I don't like smoking." He wondered instantly whether the dislike extended to kissing people who smoked. Neve Fairbrother had not complained when he'd stuck his tongue into her mouth at the school disco. "Doesn't Marco smoke?" asked Sukhvinder. "No, he's always in training," said Gaia. Andrew had become almost inured to the thought of Marco De Luca by now. There were advantages to Gaia being safeguarded, as it were, by an allegiance beyond Pagford. The power of the photographs of them together on her Facebook page had been blunted by his familiarity with them. He did not think it was his own wishful thinking that the messages she and Marco left for each other were becoming less frequent and less friendly. He could not know what was happening by telephone or email, but he was sure that Gaia's air, when he was mentioned, was dispirited. "Ah, there he is," said Gaia. It was not the handsome Marco who had come into view, but Fats Wall, who was talking to Dane Tully outside the newsagents. Sukhvinder braked, but Gaia grabbed her upper arm. "You can walk where you like," she said, tugging her gently onwards, her flecked green eyes narrowing as they approached the place where Fats and Dane were smoking. "All right, Arf," called Fats, as the three of them came close. "Fats," said Andrew. Trying to head off trouble, especially Fats bullying Sukhvinder in front of Gaia, he asked, "Did you get my text?" "What text?" said Fats. "Oh, yeah, that thing about Si. You leaving, then, are you?" It was said with a cavalier indifference that Andrew could only attribute to the presence of Dane Tully. "Yeah, maybe," said Andrew. "Where are you going?" asked Gaia. "My old man's been offered a job in Reading," said Andrew. "Oh, that's where my dad lives," said Gaia, in surprise. "We could hang out when I go and stay. The festival's awesome. Do you want to get a sandwich then, Soups?" Andrew was so stupefied by her voluntary offer to spend time with him that she had disappeared into the newsagents before he could gather his wits and agree. For a moment, the dirty bus stop, the newsagents, even Dane Tully, tattooed and shabby in a t-shirt and tracksuit bottoms, seemed to glow with an almost celestial light. "Well, I got things to do," said Fats. Dane sniggered. Before Andrew could say anything or offer to accompany him, he had